I guess the overall reaction is that people want more information. Their farm size is getting bigger. They're having more trouble managing all this stuff. So, and staff resources are still a huge problem. So people just don't have the resources at their fingertips to actually manage this. So I think data is going to fill the gap to help manage properties at the scale we're talking about now. We've been doing some work as well, looking at farm sizes doubled in the last 30 years in Australia. So one field on its own used to be four farms. So, you know, the scale is astronomical, and this gradual decline in numbers of farmers is still happening, and technology is going to fill the gap. So people are thirsty for this kind of information.
Hi, Smart Community friends. Welcome back to the Smart Community Podcast. And this month, we are highlighting smart regions with two fantastic guests. First up is Tim Neal, the co-founder and managing director of ag tech company Data Farming. Now, we first had Tim on the podcast in episode 308 in August of 2022. Then we featured Tim again in our recent summer series, so we knew we had to get him back on the podcast. In this episode, we get a little update from Tim about what he's been up to since we last spoke. We talk about how much and how fast satellite technology is improving and the many ways that data can support farmers in making better decisions and increasing yield, efficiency, and sustainability on farms. Tim then shares how a number of macroeconomic factors globally are having big impacts regionally for farmers in Australia, and we discuss the opportunities and challenges of our interconnected and interdependent world. Tim then tells us about some of the new projects his team is working on, including using data to help farmers demonstrate the sustainability of their operations and the investigation into the long-term performance of Australian farms. We talk about the impacts of weather and climate change, not only on farm production, but also the mental health of farmers and rural communities, as well as the big problem with connectivity and access to communication technologies in regional and remote areas. We finished this episode discussing the emerging trend of robots and automation being used on farms and how technological innovation can solve agricultural problems. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Tim. How are you? Welcome back to the Smart Community Podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be back.
I'm excited to have this conversation with you. We were just having a look, and your last episode went out on August 2022, which last year, and then you were part of our summer series because we loved that episode so much. So now you're back again. So let's just jump straight in. Can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Yeah, so yeah, Tim Neal, Data Farming. We've got an ag tech business based in Toowoomba. We're really interested, I guess, the biggest passion we've got is getting the adoption of technology in farming. And, you know, there's a great good news story there from a production point of view of food security around sustainability, you know, and production improvements and efficiencies on farms. So that's what drives us every day. And it's great to have a regional business that deals with the technology side of things.
Yeah, no, I love it. I remember our last conversation. I mean, we talked about a lot of different things, but obviously a bit increasing efficiency, but thinking about where our food comes from and making those things more, you know, effective, more efficient to increase productivity, but profitability and sustainability and all those type of things. But then I remember we also talked about skills shifting and changing and then also coming into the regional areas as well. Now, I asked you last time what a smart community is to you. I don't know if it's changed too much, but let's go to that and then we'll dive into some of the things that have shifted for you or things that are expanding and growing since our last conversation. So what is a smart community to you?
I guess it's having, well, being able to do the sort of things that we do in terms of big data and analytics and, you know, software development in regional areas. To me, that's, you know, it's too often than not, the vacuum cleaner that is Sydney and Melbourne, you know, consumes all of those types of skill sets. You know, we don't often see those kind of skill sets, and I guess we're lucky to have a university in Toowoomba that does offer those kind of courses, which we do, you know, offer, you know, feed out people from that. And I've got friends like Swarm Farm who run businesses like ours in up in Central Queensland, you know, and he's building robots and building software all out of the shed on the farm, which is and I was up there just before Christmas actually, and yeah, I got a massive amount of staff working up there now. So to me, that's really exciting to be able to pull those kinds of, you know, skill sets out into regional areas where the rubber hits the road, and you know, being able to have those opportunities in those regional areas is fantastic. So that's what smart community means to me.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And as an alumni of that university in Toowoomba, I can vouch for that course. And yeah, thinking about the other people I met on the course as well, such diverse backgrounds. So I did a master's in data science, obviously a whole range of different degrees that they have. But being able to do it, it was during COVID as well. So it was all remote, but they're already set up for that and very easy to use all of the things. And particularly doing a master's, I didn't need that kind of on-campus experience, and couldn't have it because it was COVID anyway, but just having all those tools available. But then knowing that, you know, doing a bachelor and things, that is the campus is a, you know, beautiful big campus as well. So it's like integrating both of those things in. And also I think this is a podcast about University of Southern Queensland, but just the upskilling that happens as well. Like a lot of people will get that first degree, maybe it's a mechanic or maybe it's like a technologist or whatever, and then being able to build on that too while they can still work full time, support a lot of them, have a family, you know, supporting the family, all those type of things, work full time, and being able to integrate that into their life, I think is a really key one. Or maybe they're working out on the farm, right? So they can't get in all the time. So having those options available is really key.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, so last time, maybe just for those, we'll obviously put the link of your previous episode in the show notes. Most people will probably have listened to that. But in case they haven't, can you give us a bit of background on your company and what you do? And then let's talk about some of the things that have changed since our last conversation.
Yeah, so we've been working with technology like satellite data for 20 years. But it's been in the last five where we've seen this massive acceleration. So we deliver now a European Space Agency product to farmers across Australia every 5 days, and it comes through a web application. And the image behind me is actually exactly what you can see. You know, there's good and bad areas of every field, and often we see up to a 300% variation in yield across those fields. So the satellite image is in real time, and it's telling you, well, it's actually picking up things that you can't see with your eyes. So it actually enables you to go and really sample and scout properly to understand what's driving that difference. Really good bird's eye view to help with that. There's obviously a whole range of other data sets that can complement that. Farmers often yield map, so they actually map the yield using machines, you know, on the harvester. We can get soils information now by measuring soil factors. So when you bring all of those layers together, you can get a fair insight into what's driving variability. So we've started with satellite data. We've now got over 30,000 farms on our platform. We've processed about, you know, 15 million hectares of data now globally, but still most of our users are in Australia, probably 85% are in Australia. But, you know, we want to now build more products on the back of that. So, you know, things like application of fertilizers are doing that based on the satellite image. So, you know, the satellite image behind me, normally you would apply the same rate of seed, fertilizer and chemical across that land. Well, there's a great opportunity there to actually target the application of those products specifically on how the crop's performing. And you might want to lift up areas with more fertilizer or cut back areas based on, you know, wastage. So we're trying to improve that management of those inputs as well. And the thing that's happened with Ukraine is that, you know, food prices have jumped, particularly around, you know, cereal grains and those kinds of things, because, you know, Ukraine is actually the breadbasket of Europe. It's really put pressure on, you know, commodities, but also the energy prices, and energy is responsible for fertilizer. Things like nitrogen fertilizer is very heavily dependent on gas. So any sort of change in the energy market impacts on fertilizer prices. So we saw a doubling or even tripling of fertilizer prices in the last 12 months. or a bit more. They've started to ease now. You know, nitrogen's now less than $1,000 a ton, but it went well over nearly the $1,500 a ton. So, and it used to be $500. So, you know, these sort of macro pressures, like Ukraine, like the impacts of COVID still filtering through, have had an impact at a farm level. So we're continually getting asked, how can data help manage that and improve efficiencies, improve profitability for growers because of these macroeconomic pressures that are coming? So I guess what's changed too is that the satellite numbers are increasing at an exponential rate. So we did talk about this last time, but we've now seen the flow-on effects of that, and the investment that's gone into the industry has been incredible. So we're talking nearly 10,000 satellites now. They reckon that might get to 100,000 in the next few years. So, you know, massive growth in the availability of data. And the thing that's changed since we've chatted is, you know, 12 months ago, you wouldn't even have access to some of these sort of much more advanced satellites. We're now getting those when there's now six suppliers on the market. So, you know, that's changing so quickly. And the resolution's changing quickly as well. You know, before sort of sub-meter resolution products were pretty available, but now they're super available and the prices come down and, you know, we're getting data very, very cheap now. So this whole technology boom has had a big impact. We're seeing that flow-on effect. But talking to some guys in the US the other day, you know, the tech bubble has burst big time in the US and there's now massive pressure to deliver. And, you know, it's a bit of a bloodbath over there when it comes to tech, and satellites are right in the firing line. So we're going to see the benefits of this, but also the downside is the tech bubble's burst and the investment's really gone sour over there. So, you know, it's a really, really washing machine type environment at the moment. There's lots of mixing going on. So many things at play. And, you know, we're in the middle of all that, we're trying to use technology to help manage all those factors.
So much in that. I'll just go back for people that, well, we're on a podcast, so it'll be audio. Behind you on your screen is basically, imagine a heat map. And do you just want to explain a little bit? So basically, people imagine there's a heat map, so you've got some red and some green and some blue. So what is that actually, what's that showing?
So it's picking up things that we can't see by eye, and it's picking up the chlorophyll content of the plant. So how healthy that plant is, how green it is. And so the greener it is, we change the colours. Basically, the reds are obviously poor areas and the blues are the really good areas. So we deliberately stretch the colours over a field to bring out those differences. And sometimes, I mean, often you can see what those things on the ground, but sometimes you can't. And this really accentuates those differences in the chlorophyll content. And, you know, you got to ground truth this stuff, obviously. It could be weeds that's showing up as good growth. So you got to be a bit careful. But it certainly helps farmers and agronomists to go and sample and understand what's causing that.
The term human in a loop with algorithms and things, it's the same here. It's actually just adding this new set of data, new information, new tool set that then, you know, you can make decisions on. And I think, like you said, like that bird's eye view is really important because you can't get that from the ground. You might be able to get that from a helicopter, I suppose, if you've got one in handy, but having that kind of extra skill, extra layer is really, you know, I imagine is helping then farmers make much better decisions, or more informed decisions, I suppose, because we're always making decisions every day. And then thinking about, you know, like you said, those macro pressures, we really need to like continue to think about how much that affects, you know, people on the ground as well, even though it's happening, you know, all around the world, and how connected we are. And that's why, like, in this space, I often say, like, you know, smart community is not just this thing over here. It's actually something that's going to help us solve real wicked problems, but also is affected by these real big wicked problems. It's not in isolation. And I think that's a really key point to bring up as well. And then thinking about, okay, oh, sorry, you go.
Well, and that's also affected things like, you know, the availability of machinery. So the car industry has been hit pretty hard with, you know, availability of parts. Well, every machine now is a big electronic instrument like a car is. It's no different. Tractors aren't like they used to be 30 years ago, which is a, you know, a busted ass looking thing with dusty cab and some big levers. You know, it's all now fully electronic. So the impact has been massive. Farmers are waiting 12 months for machinery now, just like the cars. So probably the car industry would have more power than the farming, you know, machinery environment because there's a lot more money throwing around in the car industry. So they're probably getting access to chips quicker, but you know, farmers are waiting 12 months for machines. And now I heard the other day that I won't mention the manufacturer, but a brand new spray rig that's a basic requirement on a farm now is around about $850,000. Now, it wasn't that long ago that I remember they were around about $450,000. So, you know, to enter the market now, and that's just a basic entry level one. That's not the top of the line. So, you know, you're talking close to $1 million. A cotton picker was close to $1 million not that long ago, but they're well and truly over the $1.5 million now. So, you know, the cost impact is enormous. And people wonder, you know, the shopping market shelf, why are my groceries going up or why is the bread, you know, more expensive? Well, this is the impact, right? It's the continual cost pressures, and farmers are price takers. They've got to accept whatever the input costs are and the machinery costs are, and they often get told what their price of their goods is going to be. They don't set the price of wheat. You know, the market sets the price of wheat. So, you know, not like I can set the price of my products, but a farmer can't. So they're always price takers, they're not price makers. So, you know, it's a really, really challenging environment to keep that cost price squeeze. And that's come from all those macro pressures. It's having a huge impact on farming. And I'm hearing that debt levels are also very high at the moment because the cost of inputs have been higher. They've put a lot of money into their crops because we had good seasons. So people put a lot of money in and spend a lot of money to make those crops. But then, you know, some areas got flooded. So there's incredible pressures at the moment based on those macroeconomic factors.
Which makes having those extra levels of data or different inputs of data so important so that we can make those more informed decisions about yield and all those type of things, because we know it's not just, I think when we often talk about it, it's like, oh, that's great. It's an add-on, you know, it's a new thing, whatever. But no, it's actually like fundamental, that not even profit and loss. I don't like talk about like that. But at the end of the day, it needs to be sustainable in all senses of the word, economically and environmentally.
Exactly.
Yeah. So no, that's really interesting stuff. And I think often something we don't necessarily think about all the time until, you know, affects our, you know, buying it at the supermarket, like you said. But all these things are, you know, coming down. And I think just makes it more and more important. And thinking about the farmers like, you know, its own community, essentially, like being self-sufficient, has to have tools of the trade. And like you said, these are tools of the trade. These aren't the most advanced or whatever. It's like the basic tools of the trade if we need to. And I just think there's so much in that we need to. And I also think often people, particularly in cities or whatever, they talk about, you know, smart stuff. Oh, yeah, it's just an add-on technology. But if we think about it from that real basic, you know, kind of, we need to use the tools that are available, but then look for the ones that are just over the horizon as well. Farmers have been doing that for years, right? Because they have to. But it's something we talked about last time too, I think.
Yep. No, absolutely. And you touched on sustainability there. What we're seeing is, a lot of pressure coming on to farmers to show their, you know, environmental credentials, just like everyone's getting under the same pressures. And so we've been doing quite a bit of work since last time. We're actually about to launch a sustainability token, which we've underpinned with blockchain, but it's all the data to prove that a farm is actually operating sustainably. It's not, there's a lot of, you know, talk around carbon. We're letting the carbon market do its thing. I'm going to avoid that a bit, but we're focusing on the other components of sustainability. So, you know, are they keeping good ground cover? Are they using the right techniques like zero tillage? How many trees have they got on the property, you know, in relation to the percentage of the property? Are they farming in high-risk biodiversity areas? Or those kind of things that aren't, you know, linked with carbon but are equally important. So we've actually just built this data set of farms. We're getting farmers signing up now, and we'll take this to market in the next couple of weeks. We'll see how it goes and see if anyone wants to buy such a thing. But the pressures on growers to actually provide all this information as well as their product is coming thick and fast. So we're trying to keep ahead of that curve as well and use data again to fill the gap so that growers don't have to fill in lots and lots of paperwork. It's all done from above. It's remote sensing. You know, it's done with satellites most of the time. And, you know, we can automate that and scale that to lots and lots of farmers.
Yeah, I think that's something we talked about last time as well. And it is a really important one. And also, like you said, we don't want to add an extra layer, but we want the information to be, you know, accurate. And then also then we can act on it if something's gone awry or whatever. And I think it also gives a a level playing field. Like, it's not like, oh, you know, this person had all the, you know, I don't know, filled out the form this way or whatever. It's like, well, no, it's a report that comes out of, you know, whatever standardized approach in some fashion at some point. Because we know that, and we probably talked about this last time too, but around like councils, you know, there were some councils that were very focused on emissions and sustainability and that type of thing before, you know, which is kind of like that, that's what they were thinking about, but there was no kind of regulation to say you must do ABCD. Once that came into place, the data went, oh, like the council went, oh, we actually need this data. So then it became a project of not just the, oh, how can we reduce emissions? It's what data do we have? What do we need? How can we make this actually really simple and easy so that we can meet our reporting obligations, but then also reduce, you know, the things that we actually want to do as well, measure and monitor those things as we move forward and the things that are actually impacting. Because sometimes we, and you know, if you think about an individual household, we might think, oh, well, I won't do this, I'll do this. But if you don't actually know what's causing the most impact, you might just, you know, assume it's that, but it could be something completely different that might actually be much easier to fix or solve or whatever. So I think having that information is so important.
Yeah.
So August last year, so you've got new sustainability product. What else is happening in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, the other thing we've been doing is looking at sort of beyond the sustainability stuff and the satellite stuff we've already talked about. You know, we've been looking at sort of long-term performance of farms in Australia as well, sort of at a helicopter view, looking at every single farm and how they're tracking in terms of their production, how many crops they've missed, what's their long-term like variation in production. So not just overall average, but how bumpy is the ride, you know, in the last 10 years. So the satellite data, we've been able to actually pull data from the last 10 years every season and look at every individual farm performance. And we've done all that in the cloud. So, you know, using cloud processing is the only way we could have done that, because there's about 30 million hectares across Australia we've processed, every single farm. That's grain farming. That's not cattle. That's just grain. There's about 30 million hectares we've processed, 10 years worth of data. There's no way in the world we would have done that, you know, on a computer in an office, because of just the volumes of data alone. So this cloud computing thing isn't just a talked about, you know, nice to have stuff. This is actually solving real problems at large scale. So, you know, we then looked at farm size and looked at the, you know, what's the relationship between farm size and farm productivity. And you'll see in regions where there's good and bad, you know, well, basically people that have taken advantage of opportunities and those that haven't. So it's been a really interesting exercise to help understand that, what are the drivers and where the areas are for highest productivity, which is, you know, we would never have dreamt of a few years ago. So these kind of technologies are really accessible and available now. It just needs the right people to drive them, I guess, is the hardest thing, is finding staff and that to drive those sort of outcomes. But it's really exciting work.
No, it totally is. And I think we talked about this last time around, the cloud and how that's actually then enabled, you know, this scalability of analysis. And I was just having a conversation before this one, a similar vein, well, different, but similar theme in terms of planning and how, like city planning, for example. So like the scalability and the tools at our fingertips, it just enables us to have so much more impact. And yeah, could be negative if it goes that way, but this positive impact that we can have is really amazing. I guess I'm really keen to, you know, some of those insights that you've packed over time. Like, I think that, how are the farmers kind of reacting to this kind of information, this new information?
Oh, well, they certainly want more data, and they want a better understanding of their systems. And I think there's also one layer we've got to put over that, is what's the climate change impact? So how is a farmer at wherever what's the likely impact as time goes on? Are we going to get more variable environments? The ones that are highly variable now, they're probably going to become more variable. So I think it's, you know, farmers are looking to understand their environment better, and this can help that. So it's, yeah, I guess the overall reaction is that people want more information. Their farm size is getting bigger. They're having more trouble managing all this stuff. So, you know, and staff resources are still a huge problem. So people just don't have the resources at their fingertips to actually manage this. So I think data is going to fill the gap to help manage properties at the scale we're talking about now. We've been doing some work as well, looking at, you know, farm sizes doubled in the last 30 years in Australia. So, you know, we've got farms with one field that used, one field on its own used to be four farms. So, you know, the scale is astronomical, and this gradual decline in numbers of farmers is still happening, and technology is going to fill the gap. So people are thirsty for this kind of information.
Yeah, I had not thought about it, but really, yeah, thinking about like, you know, we probably need more food, right? We still need more things, but the number of farmers potentially decreasing, but then expanding their field. So they need to be able to then scale and manage that more efficiently, not necessarily with more hands, right?
Yeah, so the number of hectares in Australia will never get any bigger. You know, what we're farming today is pretty much what we're always going to be farming, unless they develop Northern Australia with a whole of irrigation or something. But basically what we've got is what we've got. So we've got to make more use of those 30 million hectares and grow more out of them to feed a growing population. And we've got to do it more efficiently and more sustainably. So, you know, the pressure's on. And, you know, we're doing big projects in rice at the moment. Rice has had a really good run. Some projects in cotton. We've got a three-year project in the rice industry and trying to help them, you know, increase water use efficiency, you know, number of kilos of rice grown per megalitre of water. You know, we're leading the world, but they want to do better. You know, we have the highest water use efficiency in rice of anywhere in the world, but they want to push it even more. So, you know, that's, we're doing some great work in that space, and we're seeing all these opportunities popping out. You know, I've been doing some work in Southeast Asia too. So, you know, listening to, you know, traditional rice growing areas like Thailand and Vietnam, their rice yields are around about 2 to 3 to 4 tonnes per hectare. In Australia, around 13 tonnes per hectare. So even traditional rice growing areas, you know, have got a long way to go. So there's great opportunities to bring technology to the developing world that we learn from in Australia to help those nations grow more food as well. So, you know, I was absolutely astounded that incredibly low yield in a lot of those developing countries still, when you think they'd have it sorted out after thousands of years. But, you know, we're doing a pretty good bloody job in Australia. And, you know, a lot of our industries like cotton and rice get picked on for using too much water. But when you look at those kind of statistics, and that's me, you know, talking to people on the ground, it shows that we're doing a very good job here, and we should be supporting our industries to keep doing that and spread the word about technology and how we're achieving those kind of yields with our resources in Australia.
Yeah, and then I guess that lifting tide rises all boats, right, as well as we move forward. It's really interesting, and I think learning from each other is also a really key point. But also, as you were talking about earlier, like the impacts of climate change and like the fact that we now can use like this data to then show that and show how, you know, when this happened, you know, this happened, but also this positive thing might have happened over here. You know, you'd be able to see these kind of things like, oh, when that happened, because we focused here, this is what moved around or whatever the case is. I don't know, maybe the weeds didn't grow that season because there was a whole range of different effects. Looking at all those things as well, but also then telling the story of like, okay, well, what real action are we going to take rather than just, you know, kind of talking about it at a really high level. You'll be able to see that real action on the ground, right?
Yeah, well, they've got to make change. And all of our products that we build are all deliberately built for action. Otherwise, it's just a learning activity. So, you know, we're absolutely focused on making change on the ground. And that's tough in an environment like farming because there's so many pressures. And the biggest pressure is obviously the weather, you know. And so farmers are really struggling with the variable climate that we're seeing now and, you know, they've got no insurance to back it up. So, you know, if we get a storm on our house, we get insurance. Well, farmers have got no insurance for those kind of things. So they have to cop the loss, you know. So if you go to the US and you have a failed crop, you get paid out anyway because they've got a very mature insurance industry backed by government. In Australia, we don't have that. So farmers are at the whim of all these external pressures plus the weather. And everyone's seen, experienced and lived the weather variability in the last 2 or 3 years. Well, they're trying to make money in the middle of all that with no underlying backup plan except for the bank, you know. And so it's, yeah, we need to help growers manage this variable environment, this variable inputs, and do the best they can. And often they'll, like, there's plenty of growers this year that grew the best crop they've ever grown and all to have it flooded out. So, yeah, really, really terrible situations for a lot of people, even though water there's money in mud, they say, but, you know, not when it washes your best crop away that you've spent maybe $500, $600, $700 a hectare growing. It just, all the money goes down the drain.
Quite literally, right?
Exactly.
I'm going to make a some kind of connection here. Let's see if it works. When you're talking about that, obviously it impacts on mental health and well-being of, you know, farmers in those situations is huge. I think it's another conversation in this smart community space. We often talk about it from just, you know, technology taking over our lives and all those type of things. But for me, yes, that like there's these negative impacts that we need to really be, and like there's a huge topic and conversation and how we can manage all of that and, you know, make sure we're not, you know, just only living on our phones, particularly children, et cetera, all those type of things, privacy, security. But I also think that there's an opportunity there that technology then can buy back some of that. And maybe it's not leisure time for farmers, and we may have talked about this last time, but it may just be some of that, you know, clawing back some of that mental health time, not even time, but just like the assurance or the, oh, okay, now I know what my crop is doing. I can see it. Not, oh, I wonder what it's doing today. Oh, okay, but I've got it. You know, obviously you've got the list of things that you need to do. And, you know, for farmers, what starts at probably 3 a.m., midnight, I don't know, whenever it starts. So just thinking about, like, it's not just about, you know, the land and it's all of those things as well, and that connection to the country and all those type of things. But it's also that mental well-being that I think technology and data can help with.
Yeah, suicide rates are still, you know, the highest in rural communities, and particularly men and farmers are probably one of the highest. So it's a massive problem. And one of my colleagues has set up some programs around mental health for farmers, you know, called Are You Bogged, Mate? You know, it's a great little program she's got running to try and help people talk through those things. And I'm not an expert in this space, but I mean, what drives anxiety and depression is uncertainty as well, you know, and now they're in a very uncertain environment. So the weather's uncertain, the price of what I'm going to get for my goods is uncertain, and what's the price of the inputs, you know, what's the diesel price next week, you know. So all these uncertainties drive anxiety as well, and I think that's a big factor. And, you know, and obviously debt levels as well. If you're under a lot of debt, you're putting yourself under a lot of pressure. And so, you know, it still hasn't gone away, those mental health challenges. So, again, what we're trying to do is provide greater certainty around the outcomes. And that's a key part of what we're trying to do, and to try and help that, because, yeah, it's a massive problem out there, and they carry the weight of that on their shoulders of all those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, yeah, we're not experts in it, but I think it's important to just start these conversations in all these conversations we have, because, again, it's not like we talk about those macro pressures, and it's also those micro things that are happening, and the individual, like the humans at the end of the day. And so, yeah, I just think it's an important topic to bring up so that we don't forget, right?
You pointed out something there too, like the downtime. It's interesting, you know, we take for granted in our towns and cities that you get good internet and you can go and watch Netflix or YouTube whenever you like. Well, farmers haven't had that luxury. So I've heard a lot of them talk about getting some kind of decent connectivity so they can actually sit and watch Netflix. It's something that we absolutely take for granted. Well, most farms in Australia don't watch any online streaming at all, because the technology in the bush is next to nothing. Now, what's changed in the last 12 months is Elon Musk's Starlink program. I mean, farmers are uptaking that hand over fist and getting, you know, 150 to 250 megabit downloads. So all of a sudden they're able to stream some Netflix. And I think it's spot on with what you said before. Simple things like that we use as downtime in the cities, they don't have that access to. So, you know, even though that's, you know, Elon's show, it's putting the NBN to shame, really, to be honest. And people are ditching NBN hand over fist to go and buy Starlink. So, and the farmers are saying, this is bloody fantastic. I've never had this. I've got no limits on my data, and I've got no, you know, like all the other problems they've had. So they become part of society again, where see, even simple things like everything's online net banking. Well, they haven't even had the luxury of being able to do those kind of things, but everyone in the cities has done it. And it's a real struggle in the bush still with connectivity and communication. So it's great to see people taking up those kinds of technologies as well, to give them some freedom and give them some downtime and enjoy the things that we enjoy in the cities.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because even thinking about things like, it's mandatory to have like online software for your accounting and things like that. So, you know, anytime I want to see what invoices I've sent, I can just pop on my phone, whatever. If you don't have access to that, but it's meant you must, you have to do it, then again, it's just that another mental load that sits there going, oh, I've got to get onto the thing, but oh, my connection's, you know, not working or whatever. And it's yeah.
We've got heaps of farmers telling me they're going back to 3G on their phones, right? 3G. Do you remember 3G? We don't even talk about 3G in the cities, but they're actually turning their phones back to 3G. And some of the new phones, you can't even get them to turn back to 3G now. And Telstra's going to shut off 3G. But in most areas, 4G doesn't work anymore, let alone 5G. We think everyone's got to be on 5G. 4G is not working anymore in the bush. So people turn their phones to 3G, which is going to be chopped off by Telstra shortly. So they're going, well, how on earth am I going to even make a phone call? So 3G data is terrible, as you know. Well, so this is only phone call level stuff we're talking about. So this is the real struggle that the bush is having. And like you say, even just checking emails or online banking, doing invoices, all of that stuff's done online. And so frustrating when there's slow internet connections. So they're the kind of things that, you know, whilst there's only, you know, a small number of farmers in Australia, there's only 25,000 grain growers in Australia. There's probably a few more graziers as well, about the same number again. You know, it's 25,000 people. That's not even 1/10 the size of Toowoomba's area, right? But that's why people get left behind out there. But, you know, look at the important work that they're doing, and the technology is so important to achieve a lot of those things. So, you know, that's why they really want to embrace change, but it's so bloody challenging when you can only get 3G on your phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, kind of like entering society again as well, like just being able to have a phone call with, you know, a loved one or a friend or, you know, a family member, whatever. But even then, yeah, being able to, like, you know, do video chat and all those type of things that we just kind of take for granted. Yeah, it is. And, you know, okay, yeah, there's 25,000, but that's 25,000 people that, like you said, are doing essential service, essential work. And so, again, it's the smart community approach is we don't want to leave people behind. And, you know, how can we do that? And I think, yeah, there's, you know, new innovations happening and you see the uptake, you see all these things happening. But I think, yeah, it's that focus again that then we can lead, and then but you need that action, and you know there's a lot of different parties involved in that action as well. But I think if we continue to have these conversations, then that hopefully will, you know, lead to this big action that it's required, right? And sometimes it's not even hard technically, that it may not be that hard to solve, but it's all these other complexities and the nuances and things that need to then be taken into consideration.
Exactly.
Now, looking at time, let's zoom to the future now. What are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough? I think we've talked about a few of them, but emerging trends, we're not talking about enough.
We've probably talked about the ones that are really impacting. So, you know, food security, availability of technology, you know, input cost pressures, the pressures on, you know, things like machinery costs. So we're going to see now, like I said, my good friends at Swarm Farm in central Queensland, you know, they've now got a big swag of robots out in fields doing, you know, spraying work without any humans involved, which is incredible. You know, they're leading the world, and it's from, you know, half an hour south of Emerald in central Queensland. Who would have thought? So, you know, that's the way we're going to see is automation is going to push forward and much more site-specific management. So we're getting far more information about particular parts of our farms and using technology to fill that gap. And robots are going to form a very important part in there. I think he's got over 30 robots now or more. So, you know, that's an incredible feat from a small company and out the back of a shed on a farm in central Queensland. So, you know, that's the great innovation that can come from smart communities, really. So I think the robotics will drive that even more, and we'll see more and more pressure for nations to do their own thing. And we're already seeing this with manufacturing, you know, with componentry. All those things are going to come in where we're doing more and more back in our own backyard rather than relying on the world to supply all those goods. So we need to think carefully about how that impacts everything, but it's going to happen.
Mm. Yeah, I'll have to get Swarm Farm on the podcast as well. I've heard a little bit about what they've been doing, but, yeah, really interesting stuff. And I guess, I love showcasing stuff happening in regional areas as well because, yeah, often gets forgotten about, but some of the most amazing innovations are happening Yeah, in the middle of the bush.
Yep.
Well, Tim, it's been so great to have you on the podcast again. I really enjoyed this conversation. I need to come and hang out on farm one day sometime soon for sure. I'm from the bush originally, never was on a farm. My best friend was, she taught me how to ride a motorbike, and I did a wheelie accidentally the first time I rode a motorbike, but do love getting back out in the bush again. So I'll have to come visit one day. I'll have to do a on-site.
Sounds good.
Something, conversation, podcast on-site. So anyway, yeah, great to have you on the podcast again. Now, one last question. How can people connect with you?
We're on all the normals. Yeah, so Twitter and LinkedIn, Facebook. Yeah, so at Data Farming or myself at TimNeil1.
Cool. Well, we'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you. I look forward to our next conversation. Hopefully it's in 3D. And yeah, thanks again, Tim. We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.